The Shared Desk, Episode 2.
Nicely done.
Thank you. I'm a professional.
Blazing the potosphere after how many episodes?
Duh.
Duh. It is the...
Un and a half.
Yeah, I know. It is the Shared Desk. I am T. Morris.
And I'm Philippa Ballantyne.
We are fresh from Worldcon in beautiful and cabalous Reno, Nevada.
Where you can never get out of the casinos.
You can never get out of the casinos.
You must never leave the casinos.
Those are like the Roach Motel. Do they have Roach Motels in New Zealand?
Well, we have roaches and motels.
So no, this was a thing. I don't even think they make them anymore, but it was made by a group called Decon. And it was this thing called the Roach Motel. Roaches check in, but they don't check out.
Oh, it's like Hotel California for roaches.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it was. Yeah.
No, I don't know. We just stamp on ours.
Well,
we don't offer them, somewhere to stay.
I had roaches. I think roaches would like show up in New
Zealand. The biggest freaking roaches in the world.
Oh, really?
You've seen a giant wetter, right?
Oh, that's true. But that looked more like a cricket. Well, okay, we're getting off the topic. Anyway, so we just
we're getting off the topic.
Oh noes.
What a surprise.
So we're back from Worldcon. What did you think of Worldcon?
I enjoyed Worldcon. I liked Reno's weather.
Yeah.
And the facility that they had Worldcon at was nice.
Oh, it was a very nice facility, I thought. Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed being there. It was just, hell
better
getting
organized.
That. It was much better organized than Melbourne and Australia.
Yeah.
And it was...
But New Zealand represent.
Oh, yeah, we saw...
New Zealand
the
represent.
The first person we saw when we walked in was Norman Cates of
what are the chances
SF fans.
Of that?
Pretty good.
And Weta. Don't.
Oh, yes, and Weta.
And Weta.
And he was wearing a utility coat.
There you go. It's Worldcon. It's multicultural.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to do a quick intro-outro here because our writing topic actually was an interview, a really nice interview with our agent, Laurie McLean. And I think that's a good place to just sort of leave off. And then we'll just get back into the show with some fun stuff that we've got prepared, correct?
So, yeah, just enjoy the wisdom.
Of the agent savant herself.
And us.
Yeah. Laurie McLean. So, actually, why don't you go ahead and you talk about why we're at Worldcon and who Laurie is and all that stuff.
Well, we're at Worldcon because it's the place to be right now for writers and agents and publishers. And because we get to hang out with people like Laurie and Luandis from Pyre and all sorts of other cool people. But now you've got your bell.
I have my bell.
So I can say Laurie's website is agentsavant.com.
That's what I was looking for.
That makes it memorable.
So, Laurie, first off, explain what you do, who you work for, and actually, who you work for, what you do, and that should be a good place to start.
Dear God, I don't know myself, so I'm supposed to explain it to other people? All right.
Please.
Let me take a stab at this anyway. All right. I'm Laurie McLean. I'm a literary agent with Larson Pomada Literary Agents in San Francisco. Started out as an agent 7 years ago after a very lucrative career in high-tech marketing for 20-some-odd years. And boy, do I like this job a lot better.
She's got to say that because...
Oh, yeah. They'll kick me under the table or something if I don't say that. Now, so I handle adult genre fiction, which is, I used to tell everybody, go into your Barnes & Noble and picture what you see in the beginning. So you'll see at the opening, fiction, best-selling fiction, and maybe the nonfiction categories. Then upstairs or in the back, you'll see romance, science fiction, fantasy, horror, westerns, mysteries, thrillers. So I represent all those other things. And then I also do YA, which is young adult, which is for teens, which is kind of a misnomer, isn't it? Young adult, wouldn't you think a young adult would be a 20-something? No, I would think high school students are teens, but no, they're young adults as far as publishing is concerned, and middle grade, which is middle school. So that's what I handle, and at Worldcon, and why I'm with you guys tonight, is because I handle fantasy and science fiction, and that's what you guys write.
Mm-hmm. So the first question we would have here on the shared desk is agents in general. Now, there are some authors, both famous and soon to be famous, that have this problem with agents. Let's put putting it lightly, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Dear God.
I mean,
the spotlight just went on.
Yeah,
what is that, you guys?
Well, no, it is. I mean, but what we're talking about, I mean, the first episode we talked about edits and editorials, and I keep wanting to say editorials, editors. We talked about editors. And now I'd like to talk a little bit about agents. I'd like to find out from you, what is the agent's job? What is the agent's job, and what is the expectations that we authors should have working with you?
Darn, I wish I had my cheat sheet with me. Because normally people say, I want an agent because I need an agent to get into a large New York publisher. And you do, because they don't take just manuscripts over the transom, unsolicited slush pile manuscripts. You have to go in through an agent if you want to get to one of what we call the Six Sisters, which, oh God, I always forgot one. Forget one. Let's see if I can do it. Hachette, HarperCollins, Macmillan, Penguin, Random House, and Simon & Schuster.
Yay!
Hey, man, it's going to be a good night. I can tell it. I always forget a different one each time, but I nailed it. Some might say this number 7 will be Amazon, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. So what does an agent do for you beside just be like the middleman or middlewoman representing an author to a publisher? Also, agents are editors. Agents look at a manuscript when it comes in. And I have to tell you, in 7 years of being an agent, I've never let a manuscript just immediately go through to an editor. When I pitch it, I always ask them to do some edits to it. As Pip and T can tell you, if they're being honest, I don't know how honest this podcast is.
Oh,
but...
well, as honest as we can be.
And another thing I do is keep you on deadline. Another thing I do is handle those, you know, dark moments of uncertainty and doubt in the middle of the night. Oh, my God.
Wake up, Laurie.
Yeah, yeah. What can I do? Oh, my God. All those kind of things.
What a world con. The things that we can't tell you.
Yeah.
But the things that we've been talking about, this con. Oh,
that's,
my.
That's for the drunk world con episode.
Yes.
Much later.
We call that face con,
okay? Face con, yes, I've been there. I wrote down like 13 things. Being a mentor, being a cheerleader, you know? A lot of times somebody's not exactly in what I call the shoot of a genre. So I have to say, yes, this is two or three genres mushed together, but it's new weird, or it's the harbinger of something, to coin a phrase, of something new to come, and you could be the first one. So, you know, there's that kind of stuff. A lot more, but I'll stop there.
That all sounds like good stuff.
Well, I don't want people to think, because, you know, we're moving into a phase, or I hope it's, you know, here to stay, where with ebooks, you can just put something up for free. You can take your novel and put it up on Kindle Direct Publishing and Smashwords and Barnes & Noble's Pubit, and you can do that for free. So why the heck would you need an agent? Because you can just do it all yourself and start
Indeed.
Earning money immediately.
But it's good to have somebody on your side, a business partner, all of those sort of things.
Well, that's the way I look at my relationship, Pip, and I hope you guys do too, that you're the creative force that really makes this thing happen, and I'm the business side of things. Not that authors shouldn't be aware of the business side too. They should be, you know, or else you're going to get taken advantage of, just like anything in life if you don't know what you're walking into.
But you just talked about the changing face of publishing and how with Amazon and with the rise of the ebook, as opposed to the rise of the Planet of the Apes, with the rise of the Nook and the iBook and all that, well, then where does the agent come into play in this equation? If you're going to be doing it yourself, why would you need an agent?
Exactly. Because think about it. You pay an agent 15%. That's the normal, you know, natural thing. And you would pay them to get the deal for you mostly. So they get 15% of whatever they sell. If I don't ever do a deal for you, I'm paying myself zero. So my motivation is very high to get a deal for you with a large publisher with as large of an advance as I can get and as favorable terms for subsidiary rights or anything I can get. I'm trying to get the most of it as possible because I get 15% of any deal I get for you. Okay, well, if I'm not actually selling it on Amazon for you, if you're putting up it there yourself, okay, what can I offer as an agent? Because I'm one of the few agents, but I hope it's a growing number of agents, who doesn't expect to get 15% if I don't do any work. I mean, that's just common sense, and that's just... Well,
I think T could tell us a story.
There's
about
a lack of common sense sometimes, but we're also in major transition right now. So people are transitioning from models that are 200 years old. Well, as far as agenting, I think that's only been going on since the 50s. But, you know, a very old, old style of doing business started out with a handshake. You know, we've evolved into a contract of, what, 40 pages or something. But, you know, that evolution took a long time. We're talking revolution right now with digital publishing. And so when I look out at it, and maybe it's because of my background in high tech for 20 plus years, I see it as, okay, where can I add value? And I had 20 years experience as marketing. And I really feel that, fine, you can put your novel up as an ebook all over the place. But if nobody knows where it is, nobody knows it's there, nobody's going to buy it. So you're going to sell 70 copies, or you're going to sell 100 copies. And if you're putting it out at $2.99, you know, you're not going to make all that much money. And then you're going to get discouraged. So, what I feel like my role is morphing into, you know, Entourage, that show.
Yeah.
I hate to say that I'm going to be like one of those characters, but I feel much more like a Hollywood agent, you know, who's helping doing career planning.
You better compare yourself to Entourage, like, say, well, maybe, you know, if you were comparing yourself to Dexter, that's when I start to worry.
Okay,
the
okay,
way
yeah,
that
yeah.
I'm going to handle all my clients is that
they don't
follow
give me 15%.
The
they better watch yes. their backs, you know?
You should have paid that 15%.
You can pay me in a pound of flesh, or you can pay me in the 15%.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no, I feel like more like a career planner and more, you know, I give a lot of marketing advice because I've like UT, I mean, well, you were actually the person I remember standing at a World Fantasy Con, what, 2 years ago when you said, well, are you on Twitter? And I went, yeah. And you said, well, let me see. And I had zero tweets and zero followers.
Laurie, Laurie, Laurie.
And in your best voice, you said, this shall not stand. And now I have, I think,
shall not pass.
Exactly. And now I have, I don't know, 1,500 followers and 800 tweets, and I am so special. But I do notice that some agents have like 5,000 followers, so now I'm very jealous.
Yeah,
after
they're probably all spam.
And...
you can find a lot of spammers on there.
I really like you, Pip.
Okay, what else are we gonna drain Laurie for? He's giving me the look. He's giving me the hand signal. He's going to have to edit
desk.
This.
The shared desk
no,
means
I'm
the
not.
Shared interview.
Okay, so how do you see the agent role transforming along with the digital publishing transforming? Does that mean a few of them are the ones that only arise for the 15%? Are going to go the way of the...
You know, it's really weird because it's fragmenting all over the place. It's like you talk about herding cats. This would be like herding a continent full of cats or something. You've got some agents that are retiring. They're just like, you know what? I can't even stand the fact that it changed from a handshake deal to a contract, and this is just way beyond me. And they're older, and they just want to retire. This is a tough business.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's getting more competitive. Advances are getting squeezed. You know, I look at it like an economic give and take. You know, if something is going in one direction, if ebooks are starting to make a lot more money, then that means traditional publishing is going to squeeze down a little bit. Although I do also on the opposite end of that feel that people are buying more books in more different formats. So you might buy something that you read on your Kindle, and you might also buy a book in the airport that you want to read on the plane for those, you know, 20 minutes when, for who knows why, they tell you, oh, even though you have an airplane mode on your iPad, you cannot read your iPad right now until the pilot says it's good enough. But I digress. So I think there's going to be massive fragmentation. West Coast editors also, or I'm sorry, agents are very different from New York agents.
I had something caught in my throat.
Yeah, I think that was a bubble from
touch
that,
of hubris.
From that non-alcoholic drink that you had earlier. But... like there's an agency in that was from LA that's now up in Seattle, and their core competency, yes, is agenting, but they also have a lot of experience in books to film. So they're going to start to do that. I happen to have a lot of marketing experience, so I'm trying to push that into it. Some create publishing companies. Some create... one of my colleagues, Michael Larson, is doing nonfiction book proposal consulting. So for $100 an hour, he will sit with you and you can talk to him directly or on the phone for an hour for $100, and he will tell you exactly what you need in your book proposal for a nonfiction thing. So I think you're going to find a lot of fragmentation before this thing coalesces. And I have no idea what it's going to look like. And anybody who tells you they know what it's going to look like is lying.
So my question would be about the adversarial relationship that some authors have with their agents. Why does that happen?
Okay. First of all, I'm not sure that it is an adversarial relationship between an author and their agent. I think it's an adversarial relationship between either people who don't have authors, who don't have agents, or who have had bad agent experiences in the past and are now representing themselves.
Thank you.
Bing. Okay. I don't, and that's a gross generalization, but you know, there is a lot of bad feelings, shall I say, about what are kindly called gatekeepers. And agents are some of these people, and editors are some of these people. But it's anybody who's you perceive as keeping you out of publishing, whether it's because your writing maybe isn't up to the level it needs to be to get a traditional publishing deal, or for some other reason. I mean, first of all, there is many stories about, you know, can I say J.K. Rowling, of, you know, people who've tried to get agents for, you know, what, 80 tries, didn't get them. Some, you know, podunk little agent says, well, I'll take you on. And, you know, the rest is history.
And he's a billionaire.
Yeah. I think J.K. Rowling's, she just fired her agent of, what, 15 years, and he had made $200 million.
And he was upset that she was letting him go.
Yeah.
I'm like, really, bro?
Retire. And go to the Bahamas.
Go to the freaking Bahamas.
What's the matter with you?
Buy yourself a small island. Maybe one owned by Fat Brando. And, you know, and then just go on ahead and just kick back with the mojitos.
Exactly. And write your biography, you know, write your autobiography.
How I Found J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. I mean, why that's not? All you need. I mean, yeah. Just write anything with J.K. Rowling on it will, you know, sell a lot. So I think there's some sour grapes out there. There absolutely are. But I also think that there's bad attitude on the part of some agents. They come off as supercilious and holier than thou, and they are gatekeepers and they relish that. And
but enough about you. Let's talk about the bad agents. Come on. But seriously, the thing about the gatekeepers is, I mean, I personally look at it from the point of view that there should be gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is ready to be published.
That's true.
There are some things that I look at in the original Moravi and I go, That got by, and I kick myself about that. But that's the importance of how involved you are as an agent. But here's what I've noticed in working with you. And because people say, oh, so you're working for an agent. I go, no, actually, my agent and I.
It's very collaborative.
The three of us are working together for our individual careers as well as our shared career with Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, which you can find out more at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. There we go. So, but the what I've noticed is that we have a really fluid form of communication. Now, I can speak from experience that both not just from the literary field, but also from the theatrical field. That seems to be rare. Do you also find that that's rare? That agents that you as an agent talk to not just your clients but potential clients. You know, we mentioned him on the show last time. You know, I'll mention him again. You've been in contact with a mutual friend of ours, Alex White, over at thegearheart.com.
Hello, Alex.
And Alex, listen carefully. And the thing is that Alex has had a correspondence with you about his works in progress. Now that's really that's rare, isn't it?
Well, you know, like anything else in life, you can't just say all agents are like this and you put a box around them. I go to about 20 writers' conferences a year, and there are anywhere from 2 to 20 other agents at each one of these conferences, depending on how big it is. So I meet a lot of these agents, and over again, I can tell you the ones that sit out in the lobby and invite people to come and pitch them, or have in-depth conversations over time, over the weekend, with people they think are promising, or encourage people to send them stuff, and the ones that just do the bare minimum and go to their rooms. You know, it's fun. I was thinking last weekend that I would love to get the hotel records, you know, because the keys now tell you every time you go to your room and how much time you spend there. If I was a conference coordinator, I would love to get those records to see how much time the agents are actually spending.
Talk about keeping people honest. Damn. Okay.
So there are some. There are absolutely some fantastic agents. There's a woman by the name of Meg Rooley who's with Jane Rotra in New York, and very foolishly I went up to her at the San Francisco Writers Conference and said, oh, Meg, I hope someday that I can be just like you. You're my role model. She's only like 5 years older than me. So she looked at me and she's like, and I said, you know, when I grow up, I want to be you. And she's like, hey, you know, who are you? And then I kind of quietly backed away, hoping that she would never remember it. Of course, now I've memorialized it on the shared desk. But guess that's not going to work. But, you know, there are a few, but there are, you know, handfuls of them who really go the extra yard. But this is what I will say. Almost every agent I've ever met works really hard and loves books and loves writing and approaches everything that they read with the open mind of, gosh, I hope this is just going to kick my butt and make me want to read more. You know, and unfortunately, people, once you finish a manuscript, even if it's just like typing to the point where you say, the end, you know, you think it's ready. And your mom's telling you it's great, and your husband's telling you it's great, and all your kids and all the kids at school are telling you it's great. So you think it's great, and you send it out. It's more that you don't know what questions to ask, and you haven't hit the brick wall of publishing yet to see what a nasty, merciless business it is.
You can just make a nice smear on.
So who's the first line of defense who has to give you that bad news? It's the agent, and that's why... you know, agents get kind of a bad rep because, I mean, I get 12 to 1500 queries a month.
Wow.
I picked up 5 new clients this year. I handle about 20 clients at any one time. So you can just do the math yourself. It's not necessarily that your stuff stinks. It's that I am so ultra, ultra picky because I also know the editors are ultra, ultra picky.
Mm-hmm.
But do you... And no, this has nothing to do with some of the previous discussions we've had here at Worldcon. You have to like the manuscript. You have to believe in the manuscript. Should agents or do agents look at something purely as, oh, this is hot. This, you know, this is hot. I've got a a hot chick who's got a vampire boyfriend. She's got, but the thing is, she doubles.
You're making me all tingly.
Yeah, I know. And she wears tank tops all the time, and
she likes to look over her shoulder a lot.
Exactly. She's got a back tat. She's got the tramp stamp. You know, yeah, the back tat.
A lot of tats.
This book is crap, but it's hot. So I'm going to go on ahead and represent it now. So now,
nah, can I just that. Point
go
out there's a BBC, I think it's a BBC, a UK production where a guy writes a book. He takes it to an agent. This looks particularly unlikely, but it was TV.
Right to the office, and the agent said, please, come on in.
That person that I don't know.
It was
know.
Fantasy you were watching, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was sitting there, and he was talking, and the agent puts it down, and it was the publisher. He was talking to the publisher.
Oh, yeah.
Even more unlikely.
Right to the CEO.
High fantasy. Okay,
But he went down, and he was talking about it, and he was like, oh, this book is, the publisher was saying, this book is crap, and blah, 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 blah. And the author goes, oh, okay, I'll go then. He goes, but unfortunately, there is a good market for crap at the moment. So we're going to publish it.
You know, I won't say that there have been times where editors go into an acquisition meeting and the sales force says, we really need a vampire book with the girl with the tats and the hair flipping and all that. Oh, yeah. Because
wow. Have you got any of those?
But, you know, this is one thing about ebooks, though, that I wonder about. This is why I say everything's fragmenting and there's nothing's in concrete right now. Because if there are no more borders and Barnes & Noble's might be minimalizing and getting smaller stores. And I don't know about you, but every time I go in there for a book, they never have it. So,
ours.
Except yours. And I always turn the cover face out.
Damn strip skipping.
And I know your signatures, so I put them right. No, I don't. I would never do that.
You got a stamp.
Yeah. I got a stamp. Thank you for that.
It's another kind of tramp stamp. That's the other
one. Yeah, exactly. So I wonder if book buyers have as much cachet or as much to say. I mean, I've had books that the cover's totally done and signed off, and then the sales force comes back and say, no, the Barnes & Noble buyer thought this really sucked. They don't want something like this, and they would do another cover shoot.
So it's not just you saying, I've got to believe in the book, but it's got to go to you. Then it has to go to the editor. Then it even has to get to the bookseller.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So it goes from me, and I pitch an editor. Here's the process. So you get to me, and I like it, go through some edits. I create like a little log line and a little one paragraph pitch and a little synopsis. And then I pitch the editors. They'll usually say, because you can't tell from a pitch, so they'll usually say, okay, I trust you, Lori, you know, send me the manuscript. And then maybe a month, maybe 2 months goes by, maybe 3 months goes by. It depends on how busy they are. And they might come back and say, oh, I really like this. I want to buy it. That's what we hope they say. They have to go into an acquisition meeting. First, they get a second reader at the publishing house. And if everybody says, wow, yeah, this is really good, they have to go to an acquisition meeting that has all the editorial people, the high muckety-muck vice presidents or whatever, and the sales force and marketing people. They all have to agree that this is a book they want to buy. And the editor has to have prepared a profit and loss statement, which says, here are the comparables, here are the comps. I think, you know, these books sold well lately, so I think I can sell this many copies. We should do an initial print run of this. It's going to cost us this much to print it, bind it, ship it, whatever. Our sales force has talked to a few book buyers, and they say they're looking for this kind of a manuscript. So all these things together, I think we should buy it. And now you've got all the editors in that imprint competing against each other, because they only have so many spots on any one season. So they're going to, you know, keep doing that. Okay, so they decide, yes, they're going to offer on the book. They offer. I counter offer. We have a negotiation. They buy the book. We decide on the advance, everything else. Okay, so then the book goes into production, right? It's got to get edited, but you get a revision letter from your editor who's been assigned to you, the one who bought the book. And then it goes into like copy edits and line edits. And so it's doing production on a parallel track. You're getting the cover design and things like that. Well, now the sales force gets it too. First of all, the sales force never reads the book. Very, very rarely. They read the back of the cover materials that you've given them. And then they go off and try and explain this story that you spent your life basically pouring your blood into in two or three sentences.
Yeah.
And the buyer is something like, yeah, well, we want to take like maybe 5 vampire books and 2 werewolf books. And what's this other thing you've got? Some shifter thing that's a cougar? You know, that might be okay. We'll take a few of those. You know, and they just like pull numbers out of what they think they can sell. Because really, bookstars are only consignment places, because the publisher pays to send the book there. And if the book doesn't sell, they pay to take the book back. Mm. So the bookstore is really only, they're selling as much as they can, and they don't really do a lot of hand selling unless you're with an indie store, which support your local independent bookstore. For God's sakes, or all we'll have left is Amazon, and so they have their own imprints.
So
what was the question?
That was the process.
Who cares?
It just
sounds good. What are the challenges in representing two people on one, because and look, if you want to talk about the convoluted way that I became your client,
that through, I demanded it,
yeah,
and how about that,
and all that. I mean, if you want to go into that, that's fine. But I think our listeners would like to hear, because I know that we have some listeners that are working on collaborative projects, and
crazy people,
and so what are the challenges in not only representing a team but also pitching that to
only collaborative team?
Yeah.
Yeah,
are we?
You are.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, then if you want to tell the wacky
so
goofy
basically
story
she's talking about us.
Yeah, yeah. But if you want to talk
about
the challenges,
whenever I say those collaborative artists that I handle.
She means us.
You'll know who I'm talking about.
We'll be listening to you on any other podcasts. Oh, that's what she thinks.
I'm going to keep one in the chamber next time.
Well, it was weird with you guys, because I represented Pip first. Mm-hmm. And I tried to sell the first book, and that actually wasn't the first book that I sold of Pip's. She kept writing, which is what I always tell my clients. When it gets to the point where I'm selling a manuscript for you, you must start writing something else. Not the next book in the series, because if I can't sell the first book, I will never sell the second book. I can't sell a sequel on its own. So I say, start another book. And if you have to do character sketches to get them out of your head, or you have to put little plot sketches together, or whatever you have to do, go ahead and do that. But don't spend the time to write the second book, because if it takes me a year and I've gone through everybody and they said no for whatever reason, and you've been writing the sequel to that first book, you've just wasted a year. And now I've got to be put on ice for a year while I wait for you to finish the first book in a new series or a standalone book. So first I had Pip as a client, and then she, she did what I asked her to do and started writing another book. She wrote it with you. That was the only permutation on that equation.
She had genius on her part.
Oh, yeah. She had genius.
Not so, yet.
So she said, I wrote this book in collaboration with T, and I immediately Googled T, and I saw, oh, he's got some chops here. He's got 4 books out already that were fiction. He's got, I don't know, 4 or 5 out already in nonfiction. He's a podcaster. He invented PodioCast and was the first person to do a podcast novel. And, you know, at this point in my career, it was more. You had to have more. You had to bring more to the table than just the manuscript. You had to have some numbers for me, whether it was a podcast, you know, download number, or how many fans you had, or how many followers on Twitter. I mean, this was pretty early on in social media days, but you guys knew a lot about all these other kind of like ancillary things, because marketing was starting to be a casualty of publishing. They didn't have enough time or money anymore to spend on marketing, except for bestsellers or high mid-list authors, you know, pretty successful people. So debut authors or people who were just kind of, you know, second or third book into it, you had to bring something else to the table for me to sell the book. Thank you for reminding me. I just talked all the way around that word and then you went bing. So thank you.
Now she went.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. That was a very poor imitation of your iPad, iPhone. But anyway, so the fact that you had all those numbers and you had this social media presence made it really easy for me to get an auction going for this book and sell it for a lot of bucks.
That was a crazy day.
Yeah.
That was a crazy day.
I know. I made the mistake of including these guys in like every step of the way, and they're like, ah, blood is dripping out of my ears. Stop it.
I just remember this phone was like, the battery was nearly dead. I had to run out to my car and plug it in because every 5 minutes.
Yeah, really. I know, and I'm like, exciting. I don't care that you're working. Pick up the damn phone.
Well, so we're supposed to be going and meeting with Lou, but I have one final question, which I am sure those thousands upon thousands of shared desks.
Damn, I'll do this again anytime, you guys. I have so much more to say.
Oh, I know. We could go on forever.
Maybe we should get her to talk to Crazy Uncle Charlie next time.
Next time. But okay, so what's hot in the science fiction and fantasy market at the moment?
Well, I am very, very excited to say that epic fantasy and sword and sorcery is finally coming back.
Yes! Sorry.
Yeah. I love it personally. And urban fantasy, those vampires and werewolves just kicked it off the shelves, you know?
Are they still there?
Yeah, they're still there, but at least it's gotten to the point where it's stabilized. So they're not growing these exponential numbers.
Is it because of the success of Game of Thrones, you think? Or is it?
Well, it started before that. But you know how it is. I mean, you hear that Game of Thrones is coming out as a HBO series a year before it actually comes out. And you read about it in Hollywood Reporter and Vanity, whatever. It is variety. So you hear about all that thing, so that might be part of it. But the other thing is, readers get tired, their tastes change, and after reading so much, everybody's like, I'm kind of tired of vampires, I want something different. A boy on a quest, you know.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Kick-ass girl in a supernatural environment, you know, with lots of
with
ghosts,
a big lion
and a lion, shapeshifter, you know. I mean, that's what I want. Yeah.
Actually, the Rosen was included, because I remember back in 2006 she said, shapeshifters are big, gonna be big. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's like another one of my clients is Julie Kagawa. Mm. And I tried to sell this, which I still think is a fantastic book. If anybody in your audience is an editor, you know, contact me about Kitsune's Heart, which is about a fox spirit, but it's all done in feudal Japan, medieval Japan. And it's so wonderful. There's a teenage ninja, there's a fox that spirit that turned into a girl.
Didn't you show us this book and it was one of those bug killers, or is this?
No, I've never sold it.
I'm thinking of another book.
But for a year I tried to sell it and I couldn't sell it for what it's anime fantasy.
Oh, wow.
And anime is huge. And I'm like, why wouldn't you buy this? And they're like, I think it's because they didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of editors weren't into anime at this time. My stories are like 3 years old. Everything that I've sold has come out already. But this one I never sold. So I met with Julie about a year later. And I said, well, for whatever reason, nobody wants it. But that's all right. You know, and she goes, well, what should I be writing about next? And we started noodling it around. I said, well, fairies are hot. So what she did was take that and then turn it on its head and say, well, what are fairies afraid of? Well, fairies are afraid of iron. They can't touch the damn stuff. So she said, well, iron, that's kind of similar to technology. And whereas Tinkerbell is like, if you believe in fairies, you know, then I'll be strong. Yeah. She said, well, what do kids believe in? They believe in technology. And technology is kind of like iron. So she cobbled together this third race of fairies, which are called the Iron Fae. And they're all pieces of iPods and, you know, printed really circuits cool. and everything really cool. else. And so what did they do? They're in the background fomenting civil war between the summer and winter courts, because when they're decimated, they're just going to come in and take over. And the only one who can save them is this teenage girl who's half human and her father's Oberon, you know, but she's never known it her entire life. She turned 16.
What is this?
It's called The Iron King, and the sequel to that's The yes. Iron Daughter.
Right.
And The Iron Queen, and coming out this fall, The Iron Knight.
Right, yes.
Well, she's my first New York Times bestselling client. But the point is, I could have told her, yeah, fairies are big, but it's what she did with it. Mm. It's like I could have told you shapeshifters are big. It's what you did with it. This guy, it's a curse over generations, you know, and he doesn't know how to... So his character development is not only his development of himself, but it's also his development of how he interacts with the being that's inside him, the yes. monster, you know, that can come out.
So far we got epic fantasy.
So science fiction, space opera is coming back in a big way. Hard science fiction is still a minority. I think if you look at it, the UK is big on hard sci-fi. Fantasy, epic fantasy is still really big in Australia, New Zealand, and still urban fantasy is the majority in the United States. That can always shift around, but that's kind of how the lay of the land. But in science fiction, because of the YA market with things like Across the Universe by Beth Rivas and I Am Four by the factory that's book. Spitting them
don't,
out there.
Don't just I'm walk
not going to say it.
Walk away. Walk away.
I'm not going to say it.
Walk away.
So, you know, things like
I'm
that.
I'm watching you fry.
James Patterson.
I'm watching you. Crazy Uncle Charlie is watching you fry, and I will burn you with my DNA.
That's not me. Die. I am not. That is my,
that's
not
crazy
my
Uncle Charlie.
Interior monster coming out.
Sorry, I'll be back later.
And then cross-genre stuff, hybrids. Anything that's a YA adult crossover is really, people are looking for that right now. But any kind of mixture, too, of like epic fantasy that happens in the future on a space station or... I don't know. I mean, Game of Thrones obviously has thrown everybody into epic.
Is post-apocalyptic still hot?
You know, it's so weird because it started out big at, well, as Cormac McCarthy with The Road, yeah. But after that it became a YA phenomenon, but they bought so much of it that they kind of just made everybody bored of it. So you got to be careful of YA trends. They spike up and spike down really fast.
The adult trends are sort of slower yeah. waves and they taper yeah. off. Okay. Yeah.
So what about what we're doing? What about steampunks?
I mean, oh God, steampunk is huge.
But now here's the question. Though.
I'm worried. I don't want it to be oversaturated so that it.
Oh
dies
hell,
out.
Neither do we. Neither do we. But the question I know that I have for you is I'm noticing that everyone says oh steampunk is hot, steampunk is trendy, steampunk is hot. But I noticed that when we sat in on the Ace Rock presentation at Worldcon, they had maybe two steampunk titles. Well, everything else was urban fantasy.
Well, okay, remember, what you're seeing now was bought a year and a half ago. They have been gobbling up stuff for the past 6 months to 8 months. Like,
tell us we're ahead of the curve. Tell us we're ahead of the
curve. You're ahead of the curve.
Yes!
You're ahead of the curve. You guys are in the sweet spot.
Yes.
You just made Crazy Uncle Charlie very, very happy.
Do I get my drink now?
Yes.
All right!
It will be fused with Adonis DNA. And believe me, we will love you. We will love you and our family violently.
But you know... Can I just say this about that? Trends are all well and good if you can catch them with what you love to write. But I want people to write what they love because that's where your heart's going to be. That's what you want to keep working on. And you're trying to develop your voice and you're trying to learn about plot development and character development and pacing and all these other things that you need to know to write a good story. And if you're writing about something that interests you and you're also reading a lot of it so you know what... I say read books. If you love them, if you love a book, take it after you've read it for the story and then just go through it almost line by line. Take out the things that work and figure out why. Why did you like a piece of dialogue? Why did you like a scene? And then you can start to incorporate that into the way that you write. Okay. And you know what? Writing's a journey. It's not a destination. So I'm just assuming that all of my clients are getting better with every single book that they write. And you're going to, as you progress like that, it becomes always fulfilling to you, and you're happy when you're writing. And I know that sounds kind of Pollyanna-ish when I put it that way.
So since we need to wrap this up, though, we could go on for hours. So where can people find you online?
Ooh, oh my God. Let's see. Okay, so on Twitter, which I love, which I never thought I would, but I love. You've created a monster. I'm at Agent Savant, like Idiot Savant, but with Agent instead. I have a blog called agentsavant.com. I have, I feel like I'm on a game show.
quick.
Those dings are coming closer and closer together. The agency website is Larson with an E, Pomada.com.
Is that got a hyphen or anything?
Nope.
Just Larson Pomada.
LarsonPomada.com. And then let's see, what else? Facebook, LoriMclean.com, MClean. And I don't know what else I'm on. I'm on other things like LinkedIn, and but I never use them. So
and the San Francisco Writers.
Oh, yes, sfwritersu.com. So this is San Francisco Writers University, which is a new thing that we started. It's a it's a project of the nonprofit San Francisco Writers Conference, which happens every February. So sfwritersu.com. It's free to join. It's got free blogs. It's got free classes. It's got free everything. You know, there's some classes there too that are $10, but you know, it's a good resource. 24/7 writing resources, 365 yes. days a year.
Well, Lori, thank you very much for joining us.
This was fun.
Now we're gonna go and we're gonna have some beers.
Let's have some beers
or some wine.
Yes, I'm not even gonna.
Yes,
get it.
But really, thanks a lot, Lori.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for helping us out and for being part of our team.
Writing advice from Crazy Uncle Charlie.
So this is the segment we've invited one of the voices of our generation into the studio to dispense his wisdom. So without further ado, we're welcoming Crazy Uncle Charlie into the studio. Uncle Charlie. Uncle Charlie.
Yes, yes. Hello. God, you're a beautiful woman. I so want to make you part of my harem, and I will love you violently. I would.
Okay, well, that's not really in my game plan right
it's
now.
Not. No?
No. All right. But thank you for asking.
Where am I again?
You're in our studio to dispense some advice to our listeners.
I can do that.
And we've got a great question for you to answer.
Fantastic.
Uncle Charlie. How do you ensure that you have a good literary agent, Uncle Charlie?
Well, that is a fantastic question. I'm so glad you asked me that because I have knowledge of agents. I've worked with plenty of agents. I've worked with agents that understand the essence of what it is to capture the incredible awesomeness that I go under. That's the only speed I go on. I go on the speed of awesome. I go on the speed of winning, and I go on the speed of duh. There are three speeds to me. There's duh, winning, and awesome. Duh is usually stop. Winning is kind of a reverse polarity of losing, and of course, awesome is just plain awesome. I am an F-22 of awesome. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
How do you make sure that you have a good literary agent?
It's very simple. First, you take that name of the literary agent, and you write it down on a piece of paper. And then you would take that piece of paper and you put it inside a jar. You screw the jar shut. Usually it's a jar of peanut butter. I prefer using peanut butter. And you leave it out during the full moon. Once you leave it out in the full moon, forget about it. Don't even think about that jar. That jar will melt your brain and make it come out of your nose. You don't want that. You just have to make sure that you're focusing on what you want in the moment. But then a month later, you go back to the jar. And if you open up the jar and the name is intact, you have found a perfectly good literary agent. The other option, of course, is to go to CIFWA's website, that is the Science Fiction Writers of America, and go to CIFWA Beware. Usually, they have, moderated by Victoria Strauss, a wonderful forum that is called Writers Beware. That is where you can find plenty of information about agents and publishers that are possibly out to scam you or make your writing achievements less than favorable. Then you go back to the peanut butter. And inside the peanut butter, if the peanut butter has spoiled, then you know it's a bad agent. So stay away from it. And then maybe, just maybe, you will be able to capture the essence and the awesomeness that is me, Crazy Uncle Charlie. Duh, winning.
Wow, I don't quite know how to proceed after that, but okay.
I'm going to enjoy doing that. I think it's going to be fun.
I don't think we should let that guy back into the studio, though.
Yeah, I just noticed that the studio smells a bit of cheese. I don't know if you're picking up on that.
I think it's because he had his shoes off.
And yeah, I noticed that too.
Oh, well. There was a tiny little like kernel of truth in there somewhere.
It's tough being Crazy Uncle Charlie. Let's just say it. It's tough That's being
hard. That awesome.
It's hard to be that awesome. Yeah. So well, there you go. And if you want to direct any questions or comments,
please do.
Yeah. 703-791-1701. We also have Twitter. You know, mm-hmm. you can reach us at T-Monster or at Philippa Jane. Mm-hmm. And we also have email.
Yeah. Pip@pjballantine.com.
And, of course, T@tmorris.com.
So if you've got any questions for us or
Crazy Uncle Charlie.
God help you for Crazy Uncle Charlie.
That's why we're doing this. And you know, we do have to say thank you to everybody who has commented just after two episodes. What is it about this show? You know, I had to work hard to get my first couple of comments for the survival guide and for some of the other projects I've done.
I don't know what it is.
I never got this kind of feedback from all of Twitter, and yet everybody's going
it's the
crazy.
Accent.
It's your accent, baby.
No, I was talking about your accent.
Oh, it's my. Yeah, fine.
You do have one.
There we go. So where are we going to be in the next couple of weeks? FenCon!
Woo! Texas! Woo-hoo!
We are looking forward to FenCon.
I have never been to Texas.
I had last time I was in Texas was for the United States Youth Games. My brother was bowling.
Well, that was a long time ago.
That was in the 70s. And we visited Fort Worth, Texas. And
I imagine it's probably changed quite a bit.
I remember liking Texas a lot. And I think my brother did really well when he was bowling in Texas. But no, we've got, in fact, we've got to get some major shout outs. We got to make a major shout out to Matt Bowerman.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the first question he gave us, but for snagging us a hardbound copy from the Science Fiction Book Club of the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences' first adventure, Phoenix Rising.
Mm-hmm.
That does get a bell.
And what about Beth Case?
Beth Case. We got to say a huge shout out for Beth Case because she is actually providing a service to the. And you know, kudos to social media,
yeah,
for working. Works. Yeah, the puppy works because Beth went out and she bought like
10 copies,
a small truckload. Well, okay, maybe a Tonka truckload of Ministry of Peculiar Occurrence novels,
hardcovers
from the Science Fiction Book Club.
Oh my gosh, stop
doing that!
No,
and now you know. She did have the opportunity. If she wanted to, she could have easily had sold those at like $20 a pop.
But she was selling them, I think there's still like 3 copies left.
Yeah. At the time of this recording, she has 3 copies left.
I don't know. We're going to release this pretty quickly, so yeah. I don't know. But if you go over to our fan pages on Facebook, yes, I know it's Facebook, but bear with us. And there you will find the lovely Beth on our wall posts. She posted a couple of comments about it. And if she's still got some left, then you know, you two could have your hands on them. And we've seen them.
Oh,
they're very nice.
They were gorgeous.
They were
absolutely
very nice.
Gorgeous.
They were much nicer than I thought they would be.
Yeah. We haven't received our programming schedule yet for FenCon, but I think we're going to get in one more show before we actually go to FenCon. I believe FenCon is the lift up the calendar and we can
look at
see.
This, folks. It's all live.
It's all spontaneous.
And we haven't written it on there. I think it's the 23rd.
It is. It's the 23rd through the 25th.
Yeah.
23rd through the 25th. Odin One Eye from Twitter. He will be there. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't we just go ahead and announce this? We're gonna throw a tweet up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should throw a tweet up.
Absolutely. Let's get some beers or whatever.
How about you want to do it? I tell you what. Stay close to our Twitter feeds,
mm-hmm.
and we will actually fill out the details of what we're going to do for the tweet up at FenCon. And even if you are not attending FenCon, but you're in the area,
yeah, and then
we'll just meet at the hotel bar.
We'll go find a restaurant or a bar or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throw up a tent.
Yeah, there you go.
Tailgate. I don't know.
Make it all kinds of crazy whatever they do in Texas. Yeah.
And I mean whatever.
But there are gonna be some great people at FenCon. The Hugo winning editor.
Little cotton socks.
Ming the Merciless. He will be
Lou Anders.
Oh,
your
man.
Best friend and my new editor.
Oh man, he was so much. He was genuinely choked up. It was really cool to watch.
So we'll see if we can lasso him.
Yeah.
Into
very nice
into recording with us.
Yeah. There's also Gail Carriger.
Yes.
Gail Carriger, the steampunk parasol protectric mistress herself,
yes,
Gail
the
Carriger.
The vintage queen.
She will be the
queen
guest
of the vintage rack.
Yeah. She, and what a lovely vintage rack she has.
Oh, yes. It's I think her blog's called the retro rack or
something
like
that.
Yeah. And it does indeed refer to her rack.
Oh, well, there we go. I got to go visit that blog. you don't happen to have a URL for that, do you?
Yeah, it's retrorackblogspot.com.
There you go. Well, and then she cut me off on my padding. But that's the power of the librarian foo.
I just cut you off.
It's just been so we've got FenCon coming up in September, and that's really about it. We're actually thinking about doing a closer to DC local signing. We need to kind of let the dust settle on that and then think about that for a while.
Maybe somewhere like Arlington or somewhere closer to DC.
Yeah. And I'm just gonna at the time of this recording, Hurricane Irene is working her way up the East Coast.
Come on, Irene.
Oh, I swear to my name.
No. Sorry.
And guess what? We sound better than Little Steven. So on that note, Share Desk is licensed under Creative Commons 3.0, share alike, no derivatives, United States license. That's because, yes, Pip, we are in the United States.
But if you're a New Zealand, then it's a New Zealand license.
Yeah, by God. Okay, and I think that should wrap things up here. Until next time, enjoy the ride.
And we'll catch you later.